Hey folks, welcome to episode 288 of the FLW Bass Fishing Podcast in Shaftesbury, Vermont. I'm Jody White, joined from Norwalk, Iowa, by the one and only Kyle Wood.
Yeah, man, it's Christmas week.
It is. We don't have a guest this week. We are just going to pretty much talk about stuff, hopefully for not too long, to be honest. Then I think send you on your way. I have some tentative guest plans for next week. We have some moderately fun news to talk about this week. And we'll sort of see how the rest of it shakes out. I will say one thing. We should note this on top. This is kind of a programming note. Usually through the holidays, we like kind of keep stuff up on FLWFishing.com. From the 30th on, there's not going to be any new stuff on FLWFishing.com because we're changing it all over to the new website. I would encourage you to still go to FLWFishing.com, perhaps 5, 6, 7 times a day. but don't expect to see anything new. So, on that note, if I don't get an episode of the podcast out before the 30th next week, then you're not going to get anything until after that. I think January 4th is when we're supposed to have a fancy new website.
Yeah, that's a Monday, so I think that that is when it's supposed to happen, but, you know, we'll keep you updated, I suppose.
If we don't get you a podcast early next week, and I can figure out how to upload a podcast on the new thing on the 4th, great. Otherwise, it might still be a little bit of a wait, but we'll get you figured out eventually here.
Yeah, but I feel like we're making it up to you with a Christmas week episode. I feel like sometimes we're hit or miss this time of year on just getting together and recording.
Yeah. So, well, I think one key is that neither of us are going anywhere.
yeah, true.
Pretty much I've been like just alternating between sitting at home and doing work and going ice fishing like 15 minutes away.
yeah.
Trying to find bait, which thankfully it seems, from what I understand, my local bait shop has bait as of tomorrow. So
ooh,
get hyped.
All right.
Marty is going to have bait.
Attaboy, Marty.
It's key. but anyhow, I think we've got two main topics. One is to look back at 2020 a little bit. Two is to talk about the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit roster, which is out now. And I am not putting this podcast up until it is out. So, I tell you what, if you're hearing me talk right now, it's out, baby.
All right.
So, anyway, Kyle, 2020, do you have, like, from a strictly tournament standpoint, it was both a very weird year and it had some real highs. Do you have any overall thoughts, any particular things you want to dive into? I know I listed some out here, but don't feel contained by that.
Yeah, I think probably just from a on like a pro circuit level, in terms of the actual events and the guys that won, I think Mansoor winning on lacrosse was pretty cool. I know how mad he was the last time we were there, and he didn't win. That was also the same year that he won on the Potomac, but it was pretty cool to watch Mansoor get a win, like, in his element on the Mississippi. That was pretty sweet.
You know, I had not thought of that, because so there's a part of me at lacrosse that really is really mad still that Ron Nelson broke down, because I spent all year being like, oh, this will be the one Ron wins, and I really thought he had a shot at that one. But that is a really good point. If it had been his first pro circuit win, like, it would have been incredible, right?
Oh, yeah.
But because
yeah,
he got it done at the Potomac a few years ago, it wasn't, like, to me, the Potomac one was almost bigger. At the same time, yeah, for him to finally win at home, like, God, that is cool.
Yeah, and just to see, like, how emotional he was on stage, too, like, saying how bad he wanted to win it, and it's such a hard body of water to, you know, if it was like Tennessee River, you can go scan a whole bunch, you know, and you can learn certain things, but like that river's different every time we go there, and my dog's whining at me because she thinks she wants to get fed. But just to watch him, like, he utilized so many different things throughout that week too to catch fish, like a lot of you know, knowledge of the river and places he, you know, told me during day five that he grew up fishing, you know, when he was a little kid, like he'd walk to the bank and fish some of those areas. So that was just kind of cool from a dude who won. Not that, you know, Laramie Strickland winning on Harris Chain wasn't cool, or Cox winning again, or Jason Abram winning on Martin, Justin Lucas.
Boy, you remember everything.
Well, I hit a road. Oh, Wheeler won on Chickamauga, and then Rusty winning the first ever title. Like, those are all cool. But of those, I think, to me, Mansoor winning on the Mississippi River was a pretty cool thing to happen in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm going to be honest, like, going through my, like, list of things, I don't really have any, I don't have too many, like, oh, this was a really cool win on my, like, points on my list, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And some of that is because, like, a lot of what could have been the coolest wins were cool, but also, like, really, like, very impacted by not just winning, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, sure.
You know, Selesky, whose name we know how to say, winning at Sturgeon Bay. Like, awesome for him. At the same time, if you add up all the weight caught in that tournament or something like that, he doesn't win. If you mm-hmm. fish it under good conditions on the final day, boy, maybe he would have won, but man, it sure looked maybe. Like Joey and Sheffield were like on cruise control. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Even Strickland winning, like when he weighed 30 pounds, that was baller. That was like off the wall. It was great.
Yeah, that was sweet.
At the same time, if that tournament had gone one more day, boy, Jimmy Washam, like he was picking away.
Dude, he was, man.
And that was in that tournament, like one of the days was canceled. I believe I won a tournament against you that day.
Yeah, you did.
So like, even so, I don't know. It just kind of some of the really big signature wins had also like things that kind of took away from it for me. Not that they weren't big achievements, but it just wasn't quite like, I don't know, not to say I love Ron Nelson too much, but you know, when Nelson beat Carnwright and he averaged over 20 pounds a day on smallmouth on Champlain, like, that was incredible. That was, oh, God, that was a tournament.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, when Becker won, this is my next thing. The Northern Division sucked this year. We'll get to that. But when Becker won at the Thousand Islands and he caught that giant bag on the 20 day to beat Chris Johnston, like,
oh, yeah.
Those are some of the things that are, I don't know. I didn't have too many wins that really stuck out to me this year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you could almost say the same thing. Like, we fished another day at the Mississippi River. Mansoor winning is cool, but Wheeler was also, like,
he's
probably would have outpaced him.
Yeah.
In the long run. So, on the one hand, 2020, it'll forever be the year that was just weird, right? Like,
yeah.
I think, to an extent, a lot of the tournaments are unique. You know, like the fact we had the super tournaments after, you know, we kind of came back from the first COVID or from the COVID break. Yeah, there were a lot of series wins that I feel like, you know, were kind of the same way. Even, like Chris Malone talked about it from the series championship, right? We fish another day, like maybe he doesn't win, maybe he does.
He probably would have.
It just worked out weather-wise, you know, for what he was doing. So I feel like there was kind of a lot of that this year. But yeah, there wasn't a super cool, like, oh, things that went down within the tournament leading to the guy winning. Nothing really stuck out. Just Mansoor, nostalgia. Yeah. That's kind of what I chalked that up to.
I want to actually, I don't want to say that we're wrong about that, but I want to bring up two things. Or sure. Two. One is a couple of things, and it's Cody Huff. Won the college regional, I think, or whatever the Bass College tournament is.
Yep.
At Toledo Bend. Then won the series event, the Toyota series event. And, like,
yep.
Basically blew it out of the water. I mean, he made all the locals down there look like fools. Like, they didn't know how to fish.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in 2 weeks, the dude was just dropping bags on the scale.
Yeah. Then he did it again. When, like, Jason Lieblong was, like, somehow miraculously fishing shallow and actually doing well. And Cody Huff was, like, just blowing by everybody else at Table Rock. Like,
yep.
He had. I wrote him down because, honestly, like, he's one of the first things that stuck out to me about this year, and I'm super jazzed that he's fishing the pro circuit next year, but, like, my God, what a year for Cody Huff.
Oh, yeah, the guy was on fire, and, you know, we talked about it even after he won on Table Rock. Like, what he did this year was pretty insane. It was also kind of insane that he did it two different bodies of water, kind of the same principle of technique.
Yeah, I mean, he's live scoping them, right? Like, he's not fishing for fish that are on the bank. Like, and he has obviously just gotten extremely good at that.
No doubt. He'll probably, like, do pretty well next year in a couple of those. And then we'll see, like, Sheffield up there and who else? I'm scrolling kind of through. Not jumping the gun, but I am scrolling through the field list for next year just to, you know, pick out more dudes. Plus, there'll probably be a lot of guys. On a random side note, we'll come back to, I don't want to get off the track of what you're going down, but it'll be interesting to see how many of these guys, like Spencer Sheffield, we both agree, is a guy that if you can catch him on live scope or forward-facing sonar, like, the dude's probably going to be up there in the standings, right? Like, he understands it that well. There will be, Ryan Davidson's fishing next year.
Yeah.
He'll be one of those guys. It'll be interesting to see how many of these guys that get their hands on the Humminbird technology or Lowrance Active Target and then are able to utilize it and, like, kind of get on our radar for that type of sonar guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It'll be interesting too to see, like, what opportunities there are for that next year. Like, I think Smith Lake is a definite. There's definitely going to be, like, a lot of live scope action at Smith Lake.
Yeah.
And I guess Murray, like, maybe, but also, like, Murray could just be, like, actually sight fishing, right?
Mm-hmm. And there'll probably be some post spawn fish, but I think there's a chance for some of that.
Yeah, like, we'll see at Murray, I think. I don't think it's a guarantee. You know, it's not like a locked-in winter pattern, summer pattern kind of thing, if that makes sense. And then Eufaula, like, for offshore stuff there, it'll apply, but it certainly doesn't seem like... It seems like Eufaula is a lake that fishes shallow well enough that it could very easily not be a factor.
Yes.
And then the St. Lawrence, we kind of still need to learn a little bit about. Like, we know it's amazingly effective for smallmouths. We know it is amazing on the Great Lakes. But, like, the heavy current is not, like, the same. It's not really the same thing as, you know, just posting up somewhere, like, normal style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot of places where probably it doesn't play at all, right? Like, Okeechobee probably doesn't matter. Now, maybe it probably does. Not. Like, maybe. You know, that's the one. That's the beautiful thing about Okeechobee is that there's a lot of fish there, and there's a lot of fish that mysteriously get hard to catch. Like, somebody could figure that out. And the Potomac, boy, the Potomac, I don't want to say for sure it's a shallow fishery, but it's probably going to be shallow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You could easily see maybe only one really good non-smallmouth opportunity for live scope for active target in this next season, which would be kind of quite a bit different from what this season was, for bass fishing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mentioned Okeechobee, and it got me thinking. One of the absolute coolest wins for me this year, and this is one that I got to see, I got to watch, was when Brandon Medlock won on Okeechobee.
Oh.
Because, and here's, like, it's not that it was anything exceptional, right? Like, Medlock flipped a white double guard jig on a reed line to start, then he flipped black and blue double guard jig the rest of the time, right? And he basically just targeted, like, reed heads and reed lines. Like, he wasn't round reeds, not toolies, or, not, God, I sound like Rob. not cattails. But anyway, like, the point is, like, I got to watch Brandon Medlock flip on Okeechobee. And you don't get to do that all the time. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. I honestly, well, this kind of goes back to just the year 2020 was. I kind of forgot that we had a series event on Okeechobee until I started writing the preview for the Okeechobee Pro Circuit event.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh yeah, Medlock won again.
Dude, a minute ago when I looked up Sam Rayburn, I thought to myself, I wonder who won there. And anyway, it was John Cox. But like, this year, more than any other year, it feels like, you know, those, our pre-COVID tournaments were just like a decade away.
100% agree. 100% agree.
Which, like, the fact that there's not a there's the lack of continuity. Like, the only continuity I have in my life for this season is that I watched Spencer Shuffield just smashing him on LiveScope at Martin, and like, then in not too long he was just doing the same thing at St. Clair, and I was like, all right, baby. This is a thing, right? I can. This is a real thing that's happening. Everything else, who knows what's happening? Let's see. I think the other thing that I want to shout out is Ron Nelson winning AOI.
Mm-hmm.
One, because I predicted it.
Yeah.
Called that one, Dakota. You needed to win a tournament this year. You didn't hold up your end of the bargain. I forgive you. But, like, man, he just made it look so easy. It was
really
a dream.
Did. Like, it was, I'm happy he didn't disappoint.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. He, you know, we have gone into this year as, like, ultimate Ron Nelson fans. And, like, when you looked at the way the field changed, when you looked at the names above him dropping out. Like, if you just took the people who finished above him in AOI out, like, it's all of a sudden, oh, man, Ron Nelson probably ought to win AOI.
Yeah.
Then he just did. Despite the year not actually going, like, to form for him, like, I thought there were going to be more sight fishing tournaments, and there weren't.
Yeah.
And he still won AOI. So that was very cool. And man, boy, he sure looks like he catches them just about every which way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely, it seems as though he just keeps getting, like, more well-rounded, or at least gets to show off how well-rounded he actually is. And I think, like, this coming season will be cool to watch him because, like, there'll be some pretty good diversity throughout the season and the differences in the fisheries, too. But I think Ron will get a show his strength off again in 2021.
Where do you think his worst finish will be next year?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I feel like it's got to be either Eufaula or Murray. But if they're on beds at Murray, then it's not Murray.
See, I kind of wanted to say just knee-jerk reaction, I kind of want to say Okeechobee, and I only want to say Okeechobee.
You know, he's got a top 10 on Okeechobee.
The only reason I say Okeechobee is because it is, in my opinion, one of the toughest lakes to do, like, consistently well on, because everything's so random every time we're there. People that like, we usually see some new names, new faces do well. We see guys that you would think would do well do terrible. It's just like nothing makes sense when we go to Okeechobee, or at least the handful of times I've covered tournaments there. It's always kind of like, huh, really? Would not have thought that guy would do that bad. Or, huh, that guy caught him. Look at that.
Yeah. Do you want to know his finishes on Okeechobee since 2015?
Yeah.
All right, so he finished
really
20.
Good, really good.
Well, it's mostly really good, actually. He finished 21st on Okeechobee in 2015. 2016, he finished 79th. Now, that was probably a 250-boat tournament, just as a side note.
Yeah.
2017, he finished 10th. And 2018, he finished 17th.
Now, not bad.
I left out 2014 on purpose because he finished 114th in that one. But it was his first year fishing the Southeastern Division.
True.
So I wanted to cut him a little slack on that.
But I do think you're right. Like, Eufaula seems like one. I don't know. But
here's the thing about Eufaula. Like, I could see him not, like, thriving if it's a straight offshore tournament. But if you look at that Elite Series event there this year, there were so many checks cashed shallow. And, like, man, he's super good at that. Like, he's just super good, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
The Okeechobee one I can see, though. Like, I could 100%... I can... Basically this. I can believe in anyone finishing 90th at Okeechobee. Like, you could be like, oh, yeah, you know, Andy Morgan finished 90th 2 years in a row at Okeechobee. So did Brian Thrift. I'd be like, yeah, well, you know, Okeechobee. Like, it's not...
Right.
There's no other like it from a absolutely can kill you standpoint.
Maybe it's just me. You know, maybe that's a good thing for him. If I think, you know, Okeechobee is maybe where he might do the worst. Because yeah, everything else, I think you can make a case that he's going to do pretty well. And even you reading off his stats, you know, his finishes on Okeechobee, it seems like he would do well, but again, like you just kind of pointed out, if he did have a terrible tournament and finished like 90th or 100th, you'd be like, well, that's Okeechobee.
Yeah.
That's just, that's what happens.
I should look up like the last time the pro circuit went to Okeechobee, right? And just kind of look at the names, because I bet in every one of them, there's just, like, some kind of just disaster mixed in there.
Yeah. Well, so it would have been 20...
Dude, we haven't been there since 2018.
18? Tim Frederick won, right?
He did, yes. You know,
and then
second?
Both Johnstons top 10'd?
Yeah. Corey and Chris. We got Chris Chris's GoPro of 28.7 on day two. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick look here.
Did Brian Schmidt finish second?
He did.
Yeah.
Remember Sean got a really good photo of him?
Dude, freaking Sean.
I know, right? Okay, so I just want to say this doesn't prove my point as well as I thought it would. but I'm going to pick out a few folks here. Brandon Cobb finished 83rd. Shane Hugh finished 89th. Kyle, I'm going to get nostalgic.
Ooh.
Our boy Austin Felix finished 106th.
Ooh.
David Dang, Dudley Austin. Finished 114th. There we Whoa. Go, baby. let's see. Bradley Hallman, who had won there before, finished 136th.
Yeah.
Troy Morrow finished 131st. Let's see. I won't got. Hey, Evan Barnes finished 140th. In that tournament. Who fished the title this year? Buddy Gross finished 140th. Gray Buck finished 139th. Oh my god, the 130s are brutal in this tournament. Dude, guess where Andy Morgan finished?
150th.
148th.
Oh man.
Dude, Matt Airey was 151st. Oh, gosh. Anyway, I guess our point is that Lake Okeechobee can be the worst.
it can be.
Chad Randall's finished 184th, too, in case you're wondering.
No, I wasn't curious, but thank you.
Yeah, now you know. gosh. Yeah, so I think that your point that it could be Okeechobee, like, yes. I almost want to make Okeechobee not count for that question, but I think it's a very good pick.
Well, and I think part of the problem is Okeechobee is such a weather-dependent lake in terms of most of the times we have tournaments there, there's some huge cold front.
At least some of the time.
Yeah, and
usually
most
it's
of
nice
the,
in practice.
Yeah, usually it is really nice in practice. But, you know, then...
You show up there and it's like 75, maybe 80 degrees, sunny, not windy. And then, like, day one of the tournament, you're like, you've got, like, a winter hat on and bibs. And you're like, man, I'm still kind of cold.
Yeah. Keep the flip-flops back in the room, maybe.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's... That lake, I feel like we can have... We have crazy weather at other tournaments, but they still fish pretty good. Yeah, that's why I'm going with Okeechobee.
All right, I like it. Let's go ahead and, I guess, dive into the 2021 Tack Warehouse Pro Circuit field list a little bit. Shall we?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, so we've got a total of, at least as of me talking, which is slightly before the field list will go out, 164 total on the list. And it's like a mix of, there's, I think, 19 Bass Pro Tour pros. There's 31 folks in it from the Toyota Series who qualified this year. Then there's 105 anglers from the Pro Circuit who fished last year. And then there's 9 exemptions who are from, like, some of them are sponsors. Some of them are guys who, like, missed a tournament because of COVID or who knows what, basically. Like, it's mm-hmm. There's a kind of a hodgepodge. And anyway, I would encourage you to look at the whole thing. I guess, Kyle, do you have anything that, like, stands out or any thoughts or anything like that?
Larry Nixon's back.
Oh, gosh. Is that not exciting?
Dude, I'm fired up. Like, it was exciting enough this season when, like, he was looking to maybe come back mid-season.
Yeah, like, maybe he'll be back for the final one or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, obviously things happen, but it's nice. I think it's super cool that he basically had a whole year off to, like, recover, you know, get feeling right again. And he's going to come back next year. And we're probably going to watch him catch some hogs.
I got to imagine we will.
Yeah.
One thing I like is there's a really strong contingent of Western pros this year. And I certainly could get this wrong. But you got Mike Caruso and Ty who are coming over from the Western division, which I say is really strong. It's, you know, two guys. But that's
still
more than...
Well, and the Reese brothers.
Well,
I wasn't really counting them.
I was counting, like, new guys.
Ah, gotcha.
Because, like, I'm pretty sure Meyer's fishing, too. And, like, Justin Lucas and Brett Height. But
Sure. So, as a whole of Western guys, yeah, there are West guys. But
there's
new
a lot of Western guys. I'm curious to see how our new crop of Western qualifiers do, if that makes sense.
Yes, for sure.
One disappointment on the field list is that Dylan McMillan is not on it.
No, he is not.
You're hoping for the trio.
Dang, we're still stuck with two McMillans for now.
Yeah, well, for now. It certainly seems like there's a chance we could add a McMillan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which would be really just great to see. Do you have any other, like, I don't know. It's hard to look at a field list of 164 guys and be like, all right, have some opinions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm also not going to read the whole thing.
Yeah, again, definitely go look at it. Lawson Hibden's fishing.
And Dion.
Right? Which is cool. Lawson is Dion's son, I guess, for those curious. Yeah, otherwise, it'll be, like, just as I sit here scrolling through this list, it's kind of one of those things where, like, you look at it and you're like, oh, okay, like, this could be pretty fun to watch a lot of these dudes, you know, get turned loose on some of these lakes. Like, I feel like it's a pretty good field list. I feel like the rookie class, I'm kind of excited to see what these guys do. We got all the lanes. Cal, I guess, being the newest lane of the bunch to join the ranks. Be interesting to see how he does. But yeah, like, looking at a field list, I'm definitely kind of like, yeah, this is a pretty good group. I like the group of guys coming from the Toyota series.
Yeah.
Just saying Cal kind of made me think about that. But scrolling through, looking at some of the guys that are fishing from various divisions, seems like a good crop moving up from that level to the pro circuit.
Yeah, it's definitely a solid group. There's some really, I would say, very exciting young talent. There's some guys who are, like, older and more, like, ready to jump into the prime of their careers, so to speak. And, like, I think it's a good combo. And I am definitely curious to see how some of those guys do. Like, if we're talking, like, super young people, you know, Cody Huff is one, right? And Cal Lane. But, like, you've also got Chase Serafin,
who
is like 10 years old and super good.
Yeah, he's going to have someone drive him to the events.
Yeah, it's not quite like that. The other one other thing is there's some like fun international talent this year. So Takayuki had what, one or two top 10s in the Central or the Plains division?
For sure one.
Yeah, definitely one. And so he qualified from that. Takayuki Koike, I think I'm very open to pronouncing his last name wrong. But then
Taka is what most people call him.
Yeah, and but then Jacopo Galelli is also coming over. So like we're gonna have it's gonna be interesting. And we're certainly gonna learn some new things.
Michael Matisse back.
So did he fish last year and I just never noticed him, or did he just not fish at all? Or did he fish the beginning and then couldn't come back?
Well, yeah, I thought he fished the beginning and then couldn't come back from South Africa when the whole COVID thing started.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I tell you the spelling of his last name is wild. Yeah, that's definitely right, because he fished Lake Martin, and then he must have gone home. And then couldn't have come back.
Yeah. Because
I know there was one dude, I read a story about him, one dude from South Africa who didn't go home and just stayed and, like, fished a bunch of Bass Opens or something.
Oh.
And then there were, like, other people who that affected, too, because, like, you know, I think Charles Sim might not have come for one tournament because of that. And then I know the Johnstons and Gussie were, like, having all sorts of border related, not really snafus, but like it was more of a process than normal.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think that kind of covers it.
Scrolling through this list, I feel like we've talked about it on here before, but I just want to step back for 1 second and go to, like, highlights of 2020. Shout out to Kurt Mitchell for
just crushing it. Year.
I apologize. I didn't bring that up earlier. I just saw his name on the list. I'm going to give him a round of applause. Way to go, Kurt.
He was arguably the only good thing about the Northern Division. That's not entirely true, but
you could make a case for it.
Yeah. He, finished 31st in AOI in the pro circuit this year, which was really good. Actually, not as good as he did in 2019, but still fantastic. Sixth place in the Toyota Series Championship. He won on Erie that one time, had a ultra mega bag. He did. One of the best parts about it was he was sure that he had won AOI in the Northern Division. and the way the points are, like, they don't update instantly. And so I told him, like, a number of times before the tournament, I was like, no, I don't think you're going to win AOI. Then after day two of the Detroit River event, he was like, I won AOI, didn't I? And I'm like, I don't think you did, man. Like, I had to tell him, like, several times. He didn't win AOI. He finished sixth, but still, congratulations. That Erie win was incredible. I tell you what, if you wanted to make an impression to, like, to new ownership or something like that, boy, Kurt Mitchell, there's probably folks in the MLF office who are in Tulsa who are like, man, that Kurt guy, he's awesome. He catches them. I think he might be the next KVD.
And I feel
I hope he is.
I feel like going forward, like, should probably get him on the podcast again, because he's such, like, I feel like over the years we've talked about John Cox and how much of a hot mess he is. Like, oh, just kind of, like, scatterbrained and random.
They're very similar.
Kurt Mitchell is John Cox, just in a fiberglass boat, but constantly has stuff breaking on his boat. He's constantly fixing stuff. And he just kind of, like, shows up to tournaments and catches fish. So maybe that's something we'll dive into a little more in 2021, is the Chronicles of Kurt Mitchell.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea for one of our next guests. Gosh, I can't wait to ask him. Like, Kurt, do you think, how many AOI titles are you going to win this year? Yeah, that is a good point. I remember there was one tournament where he's got a Triton. It's got a big center hatch, like a Ranger, right? It's not multiple.
Yep.
It wasn't attached to anything.
Yeah, that's right.
It was just laying in there because the hinge on the front had broken off. And he was, I think, running to tie. It's like, okay,
yep,
buddy.
Yep. Best of luck.
Have fun with that one. I wouldn't do it.
Oh, gosh.
Or at least I would do it, but, like, take everything out. But he didn't take everything out.
Nope. Just keep running it.
Oh, man, that was Kurt Mitchell, pretty incredible all around. who do you think is going to win AOI? I feel like it's really super early to talk about this.
Man, that's a...
All right, you want me to tell you who I think it is?
Ron Nelson.
I was going to say Justin Lucas.
Oh, I was going to say Nelson defends his honor.
Look, I super want that to happen. And it might. I'm not, because, I mean, I'm a Ron Nelson believer. Although I did just pick Justin Lucas. So if you want to kick me off the Ron Nelson believer squad, feel free. Another guy who really could use an AOI title is Cody Meyer.
Yeah.
Like, he has come super close. Well, actually he hasn't, because Andy Morgan kind of, like, took it to him in the end of that one-year run. But I don't know. I think the... Lucas, I think Meyer, and yeah, I mean, I think Nelson's got to be in that conversation. I don't think you can have an AOI conversation without Ron Nelson. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. Now, what if I also say, how about some Bradford Beavers?
I still want to see a little more smallmouth action.
My only holdup I was going to point out is the St. Lawrence. I think the rest of the schedule for Bradford could bode very well.
It really could be good. Because he's got a ton of Okeechobee experience.
Yep.
He's, like, I think he's a perfect match for Eufaula.
Oh, exactly.
And
I think Smith, I think he'll... That and Murray, I think he'll have no problem catching fish. The St. Lawrence was kind of the only one that really, not worried me, but definitely would be kind of maybe the weak point in that chain, perhaps.
Yeah. I'll say this. I just looked up some stats. He's got a lot of Okeechobee experience. he doesn't have, like, a pile of Okeechobee success. Like, I'm not saying he's just bombed it every time, but that could be a place where he could stub his toe.
It could be. But so on the flip side of Ron Nelson, it could be the place that he goes ahead and gets second place.
Yeah. Or wins.
Or wins.
I mean, Bradford Beavers is super good. Honestly, dude, I'm in now. I don't think I would, if they had the same odds and I had to put money on him or Ron Nelson, I'm putting it on Ron still, I think. But,
yeah,
like, I don't hate the idea of, you know, keeping some eggs in both baskets if possible.
Now, there are a lot of guys.
Dude, he's finished 12th in AOI each of the last 2 years. What a hammer.
I'm saying just superstar. Nice and consistent.
Yeah.
Now, I think you could also, like, if I was a betting man, I think putting some money on Spencer Shuffield might not be a terrible idea either.
Yeah. Also, John Cox. Assuming he finishes the whole season, I guess I have to, I don't really know what John's doing, but if he finishes the whole year, like, win AOI.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was,
but I think we were both kind of assuming that was, like, maybe kind of an obvious.
Yeah, that's certainly of course, John Cox.
Low-hanging fruit, yeah.
Yeah. I like Shuffield a lot. Like, there were honestly some times this year where Shuffield, like, left a little bit on the table. And I feel like he didn't get very many, like, critical key big bites. And Ron, like, got a lot of big bites. And that's not to say that he won't get those big bites going forward, but I could see Shuffield, like, getting a little bit luckier and winning and making a real run at it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
The other one I wanted to mention is Becker.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm a big Matt Becker believer. It's hard to say the schedule sets up, like, really well for him because there's only one true northern event. At the same time, Matt Becker, like, consistently proves that he catches them wherever.
Yep. Yeah, he definitely has been showing how well-rounded he is across the country over the last few years.
Gray Buck as well, but I want to see another year out of Gray before I'm like, okay, I'm locking Gray into AOI contention, if that makes sense. He had a fantastic year, but prior to this year, he was not always on the ball quite as much. So
right.
I want to see, like, a little more. I want to see another year before I'm, like, willing to just throw him in there. But, man, kind of talking about these, like, talking our way through the top section of this, it's kind of fun. Like, there's some really good pro circuit talent. There's some really good talent from the Bass Pro Tour. Some of them who used to fish the pro circuit, like, actually a lot of them who used to, or the FLW Tour, or some version. So it's going to be, I would say it's got a chance to be an extremely fun year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. We should probably start to wrap this up, if only because Eli is getting super antsy.
It is dinner time.
It's 4:06. He eats at 4. I fed him at 4:01 yesterday on the ice. I'm trying to feed him while I ice fish with him so he builds positive associations to ice fishing. I'm not sure that it's working yet. But anyway, is there anything else we need to touch on or talk about before we send this thing home?
Now, I found a few reviews for Tackle Warehouse, and this is a road we can go down later, but may I read one review to you for this particular bait, only because I just love the enthusiasm. Well, really, a couple of these reviews, the enthusiasm is just through the roof.
I can't wait to hear it. Can I also try and guess it?
You may.
Okay.
We are in the soft stick baits.
Okay.
Category. Sluggo. Or soft baits and then the stick baits.
Soft stick baits.
Okay, yes.
So these are like everything.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a lot of these. All right.
And you could probably guess it. A lot of these have reviews, and a lot of them have positive reviews.
Do a lot of
these
them
things
say
just catch fish.
Do a lot of them say not as good as a Senko or better than a Senko? Like, that's probably like half the reviews.
Some of them do. Okay. But this is the first review on this one is from Michael and says, "This is a wacky rig mofo. Nice. This is great! Exclamation point. You won't need anything else. Get some. Really, this rocks." So, you know, might as well buy some.
Might as well.
Now, this review from Anthony, really, it was the first thing I saw on this bait, and it made me think, like, huh, maybe they are sweet. Or maybe it's just the guy had a good day fishing. The first sentence reads, "First off, I got these things for Carolina rig." So I think he says, like, I think he means first of all, or maybe it is first off. The punctuation in some of these things is just horrible. But got it for a Carolina rig, flipping Texas rig, exclamation point. Jeez Louise is all I can say. Now, here's a hint for you, Jody. This simple, weird-looking bait will make you throw everything else into storage, LOL.
Okay, so it's weird-looking. I like that.
Get you some and give them a chance. You'll be hooked on blank for life with about 19 exclamation points.
Wow, nice.
This other guy, Jake, says, "Love these things. Caught my personal best largies off there in Green Pumpkin, Texas rig. It really burns them up." I think he means caught my best largie. Yeah, see, some of these are just oof. But, you know, Jake's also a big fan. But they're different looking. So what I'm telling you is it's not a Senko.
Yeah, I'm getting that sense. I tell you what, I keep looking at the ones with all the ribs. And let me tell you, these ones with all the ribs have like some phenomenal reviews. Lake Fork Finesse Ring Fry. This thing looks like you could wacky rig it.
Oh, dude, I've never really looked into this category.
The worm snapped in half after my fourth cast on a Carolina rig.
There are a lot of reviews in these that are like, make sure you put an O-ring on. Which I guess, you know, maybe that guy needed to do.
Yo, how about the Lunker City Spanky Worm? This thing is so dumb looking.
Right?
That's not it, though, I guess.
Nope. No, it is not. No.
These things are much better for wacky rigging than Senko's! Exclamation mark. All right. We're continuing to scroll.
You keep scrolling. I'll read another comment from here. This is just from Jay. It says, "Perfect bait for Carolina rig. Smallies absolutely inhale these. Many great colors, with most of my luck coming on chartreuse pepper. Very durable, and you can catch multiple fish on one blank."
I found it. It's the Smash Tech Custom Baits Bubble Fry Stick
Bait.
Yeah! Dude, here's the thing. I'm about to order some. This is great.
Dude, don't they look good?
They look really good.
That's why I clicked on it. And then I read a couple of the reviews. I saw the guy that wrote, "Jeez Louise is all I can say." And I was like, okay.
I'm in, baby.
This guy gets my vote.
The green pumpkin doesn't look very green pumpkin, though.
No, it really doesn't.
But I tell you what, that watermelon chartreuse, ooh la la.
Ooh, and the blue craw, I could get down with blue craw.
Yeah, now that one looks like green pumpkin.
Yeah, that's I think, the juice there, along with the chartreuse pepper.
Dude, let's see, I guess it would have been 2 years ago. I bought a bunch of French fry worms to Carolina rig at Toledo Bend.
Yep.
You know, so I could be like Todd Castleline.
Absolutely.
They caught fish. They worked. Then I continued to use them. I caught quite a few fish just flipping them on a light Texas rig. And I haven't done it since. But it was one of those things where it's like, I had packs of baits. I was going to use them. It's stupid, whatever. And I never came back to it, really. But maybe next year is going to be the year that I just take the Northeast by storm with French fries and little bubble weird things and bubble fry sticks.
Hey, man, it makes sense.
I'm going to add this to my wish list, which is a feature available to folks who have an account on tacklewarehouse.com.
Boom.
Wow. Check out that selling. I don't know if it added to my wish list or not. Let me triple check this thing. I have a list called on that I call, it's called On the Docket, of stuff that I mean, that I'm meaning to buy. I don't always buy it, but like sometimes I do.
Sometimes you come back and look at stuff that you, you know, put on your wish list and you're like, ooh, definitely not. I don't know what I was thinking. And then sometimes you're like, how did I not buy this right away?
Yeah. There's one, one of the things that I've got on my wish list, Spike It. Okay, that's good. let's see. Got some jerk baits. These are mostly jerk baits that I wanted to try because I thought they would be cheaper than mega basses and might be good, but I don't think I ever bought them to try. Spooks.
That's fair.
I don't know when I was thinking I wanted to buy them. Probably somebody caught them on a spook in a tournament and I was like, I should get some spooks. And then I thought to my, then I probably was like, you know, I kind of have like 500 walking baits. Like literally, I have more walking topwaters than probably any other single hard bait. And I use them like, you know, I don't know. It's just not a bait you use. You burn through a lot of them on.
Right, right.
Now, some poppin' fatties. Those are good, baby.
There you go.
I have a bunch of them, too. I'm at a very good frog level right now. All right. Well, this has been fantastic, Kyle.
We did it. We stumbled our way through 2020.
Yep. It really was a good big fish year for me. And a bad boat year. And Kyle, you had a baby in 2020. That's pretty key. Well, I guess your yeah. wife did. You helped.
Yeah, she did. I guess I have to take care of it now.
Yeah.
Oh, hush, dog.
Suze is like super excited for being fed in 2020.
Yeah, oh, yeah, man. She's all about that.
Eli is literally standing by the door. Like, hey, let's go, baby.
Well, folks, we had to cut this short because our dogs were getting rowdy.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, sorry to everyone who maybe almost went off the road in the last episode because I forgot to edit out when Eli barked. It was apparently extremely loud. But anyway, yeah, podcast at FLWfishing.com or MajorLeagueFishing.com if you want to send us an email. They both mm-hmm. work. Kyle is Kyle Lumber on Instagram. I'm Jody Blanco. My sister caught a trout that matches her hair yesterday.
It was a very colorful trout.
High quality Instagram content right there, and a lot of pictures of Eli. But anyway, I guess, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Pre-New Year, Happy New Year in case we don't get to that. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, deep breath. We're almost into 2021, new tournament season, new fun stuff, and let's get after it. Until next time, see ya.